A single immigrant can bring in virtually unlimited numbers of distant relatives. Under our plan, we focus on the immediate family by limiting sponsorships to spouses and minor children.
A part of the president's State of the Union address taught us two things. One is something about how chain migration works or might work, and two, that Americans don't really know how to hiss. But never mind that second part. Let's talk about the first. Jessica Vaughn is the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. She joins us from Washington, D.C. to tell us a little bit about what the president said and what it all means. Hi, Jessica. It's John Williams. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Good to be with you.
You know, I suppose you have a dog in this hunt. I suppose you're an advocate for one side on this. But before we get to that, I wonder if you could just answer a few nuts and bolts questions for me about immigration in this country and how it works. Specifically about that, about family reunification or chain migration. What is that and how does it currently work in this country?
Chain migration is the process of immigrants coming here who were sponsored by family members who came before them. It's that simple.
And who? You know, so if I'm here and I want to sponsor a family member, can I sponsor anybody? How do we define family?
Under our law, people can sponsor certain relatives that are set out in the law, and that's specifically if they get married after they've come here. Now, immigrants can bring their immediate family with them when they get their green card. If they get married after they get their green card, then they can sponsor that spouse and that spouse's children. When they become citizens, they can sponsor their own children who are adults, and if those sons and daughters are married, they can bring those kids. They can sponsor their parents, and they can sponsor their siblings and the family of their siblings.
So my kids, my grandkids, my parents. I didn't hear you say nieces and nephews, but I could.
Well, that would be the kids of your siblings.
Siblings, so I could bring my nieces and nephews. So really, pretty much everything right. That I would define as my nuclear or even the second tier of my family, I could invite, I could sponsor. Would they automatically, by virtue of that, be able to come into this country, or would there still be a waiting process for them?
Well, some of the categories, there is no wait. For example, spouses and parents, there is no wait. They come in unlimited numbers. And those are the biggest categories of chain migration. For the other categories, there are waiting times, and they're different depending on which country people are coming from. So Congress has imposed numerical limits that we call the per-country cap, so that if a country has more people interested and on the waiting list for the limited number of visas, then it's a slower process. For certain countries like Mexico, the Philippines, India, and a few others, they have longer waits because Congress didn't want the flow of immigration to be dominated by a handful of countries. They wanted to open it up to everyone on a more level playing field.
It's kind of an interesting question. Right. I mean, if say a lot of people from India and Mexico, just to pick two, want to come to this country, we're going to put a cap on that because we're only going to let so many people in, and we don't want them all to be from Mexico and India. We want to let Luxembourg and Nigeria have a crack at it too, right?
Right.
Yeah. Then at any point in along this way, do we say, okay, who has the highest education? Who can do the most benefit for this country?
Not in the family categories. They're strictly based on family relationships. We do have other categories of immigration, though, that are based on skills and education or accomplishment, and there is no limit. The limit is 140,000, but we never reach that. Every year, about 20,000 people come in that category. And we also have categories for people who are sponsored by employers. These are also skills-based. They have to have at least a college education or the equivalent number of years of experience. And those are heavily oversubscribed also, and there's a waiting list in those categories probably of at least 500,000 people.
Back to chain migration. Are you chain migration? It's okay to use that phrase in your estimation. That's not a slur of any kind.
I don't think it's a slur at all, because it simply refers to the process and kind of gives a visual appearance of, you know, continued links in the chain of family members. And it's been used for many years by researchers and policy experts to describe this process.
So if I am fortunate enough to become a citizen of the United States from, say, Mexico, if I'm married and have kids, then and they all get to come right away. So it's not just one person that's in. It may be three, four, five, six, whatever. And one more time. And then my parents would be able to come as well, correct?
Once you, the immigrant, become a U.S. citizen, then you are eligible to sponsor your parents.
I see. And then maybe the waiting time is a little bit longer, depending on how further out you expand the family. And then what is the lottery? Is that was the can you explain the lottery system to us for countries or individuals?
Yes, that's a separate category that was created in 1990 to create a process for immigration for countries that up to then had not sent many immigrants to the United States. Originally, actually, it was a pilot program designed to legalize mainly Irish illegal immigrants who had not qualified for the 1986 amnesty. But after that, it was made permanent and opened up to all the rest of the world. And since then, these 50,000 visas a year have been given out on the basis of a random lottery. It's been very popular in certain parts of the world, but it also, unfortunately, has been there's been a lot of fraud in the program, and it's difficult to administer in a way that can prevent the fraud.
Tell me about that.
It has been in our law for a while.
What is the fraud? I mean, how does that work?
Well, there have been instances of criminal organizations. In one case in Eastern Europe, for example, they hacked the identity card database of a university and submitted applications for every student at the university because they had their pictures, their date of birth, and all their biographic information. And then inevitably, you can imagine, with thousands of applicants, some of them did win. And so they staked out the post office and intercepted the winning notifications and then went to those students and tried to coerce them into, you know, accepting this offer and going to the United States. And, you know, they gave them pop-up spouses to go with them. And when they got to the United States, they made them continue to work for the organization to sort of pay them back.
Wow.
There are others who sell their winning tickets. It's been a problem for the State Department for many years.
All of this sort of begs the question, though, who do we want to let in? For instance, in principle, the lottery thing sounds a little bit like the Statue of Liberty. Bring us your tired and weary, and we'll be an oasis for them. That's a true American ideal. The fraud notwithstanding, I think some people are even questioning that, including the president, who thinks that's way too random. It's designed to be random. It's not based on skills or merit, right?
That's right. I mean, you have to have completed a certain number of years of high school or have some experience, but all of that is very easy to fabricate for people. Essentially, if you win, you're pretty much going to be in unless you're a criminal or a terrorist.
All right, this is interesting. Now, you may have a question about these 2 points or maybe another aspect, the four pillars, one of which is the wall. For Jessica Vaughn, she's the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Call me right now. We'll pick it up here in just a minute. And I wonder, what do you make of these four pillars and what should happen next, Jessica? 312-981-7200. John Williams on WGN Radio. You should call me right now. President Trump visited with Republicans today and reviewed his State of the Union address. What did he tell them? Coming up at 2, it's 1:52 here on WGN. I'm John Williams, and we're talking to Jessica Vaughn. She's the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. She's in Washington, D.C. We're asking her about some of the points the president made about chain migration, about the lottery system, about the wall, about the four pillars, and we're learning a little bit about how that system works. By the way, Jessica, so you've described to us some of these legs, if you will. How would it change? What would be the most dramatic change if the president gets his way on all of this?
Well, we've been talking about these different kinds of immigration, and Congress has always sought to have a balance between the obvious wanting to let people bring their family members when they immigrate here, and also the other obvious, which is humanitarian admissions, and another, you know, wanting to bring people with skills and education. That has all gotten out of balance over time because largely the fastest growing category it has been chain migration, which is, and because some of those categories allow people to bring in their family members in unlimited numbers. So the president's plan uses the opportunity of doing an amnesty and passing legislation to make some long overdue changes in our law. So one would be, the first pillar is a path to citizenship for about 2 million of the so-called dreamers who arrived as children. And offsetting that with cuts to chain migration, because any amnesty means that there will be a growth in legal immigration downstream.
Yeah.
And also cutting the visa lottery, because that's probably the most, for lack of a better word, extraneous category of immigration that we have that's not, you know, as compelling as, say, refugees or family members. And then lastly, boosting border security and immigration enforcement so that on its own merits, because there are real needs there, but also to avoid setting off a new wave of future illegal immigration inspired by this big amnesty. So it's really not just standalone elements. It's pretty much a package of things that work together to try to improve our immigration system and deal with this issue of the people who arrived as kids.
Do you have anything to say about the surveillance along the borders, either a wall or higher surveillance along the border?
Well, I think both of them are useful in different ways. There are places where unquestionably a barrier would be very helpful to the Border Patrol because it slows down the, you know, the entry of people. But that only works in places where it can be patrolled, and surveillance is also very helpful in places that where there are not huge numbers of people crossing and the conditions are very extreme and the Border Patrol can't get to. Sometimes it's good to just, you know who's coming across so that you can send someone to apprehend them at a different point. So they both work.
I wonder if you would prioritize these things. Should we absolutely have the wall? I mean, that's got to be a deal breaker, or can we do that a different way or at a later date? Is the chain migration thing maybe most critical? What's your thought about all of that?
Well, honestly, I think that the two pillars that make the most sense together are the amnesty for at least some of the dreamers paired with cuts to chain migration to offset those numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes the most sense because if we're going to give out a lot of new green cards, we ought to look at trimming them in other areas for the reason that immigration has had a disadvantage for Americans who are competing for those very same opportunities with the people who are going to be getting the amnesty and a lot of the future immigrants. So there are, you know, people who are struggling, who for whatever reason haven't had a lot of higher education, who are working in jobs where they have not seen much of a pay increase over the years, like construction and food processing and landscaping. A lot of these jobs are also taken by illegal immigrants or new immigrants. There needs to be some relief for them as well. And so I think this is a balanced approach that the president has put forward. I think the amnesty he's offering is a little bit too many people. I think the chain migration cuts need to come sooner rather than later. But he's trying to get something through the Senate where there are a lot of different views on immigration. So I understand his approach and that a compromise is necessary.
You know, you mentioned landscapers. I guess a lot of us could relate to any number of populations of people we've worked with or have hired. Say you've had a landscaper come out, and it's a crew of guys who speak marginal English, and you wonder about their citizenship, but you don't want to look too close because they're doing a good job and they don't charge you as much as some other guys. I wonder what would happen if we minimized that population, and I presume so that people who are already here and are in fact U.S. citizens will be able to get those jobs. Would the cost of those jobs, would my landscaping bill go up as a result?
Well, it might. I probably would. But on the other hand, all of us pay the cost as taxpayers or healthcare consumers when a landscape worker who is paid under the table and can't get workman's comp if he or she is hurt or, you know, doesn't have health insurance, has those needs and goes to the hospital and is treated in the emergency room. And that's something that we as taxpayers cover for these employers who have this business model of hiring illegal workers because they're cheaper for the employer. So there's a social cost and a greater fiscal cost to looking the other way at that kind of an employment arrangement.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing.
And it would, you know, to pay them a little bit more wouldn't be that much more of a cost overall for clients or for taxpayers.
Do you think that any of these measures would make us safer from crime?
You mean the amnesty or cuts in chain migration? No, I don't think that public safety is really the driving argument there. That certainly is an argument in favor of better border security.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if we don't know, if we can't get a better handle on border security, then we are, you know, feeling the effects of drug trafficking, human smuggling, you know, all kinds of other illicit
activities. Right, but my understanding is that the per capita, U.S. citizens commit more crimes than immigrants or even illegal immigrants.
Well, I've studied this issue for many years, and I don't see any evidence whatsoever that immigrants commit more or less crimes than American citizens or any other subgroup. And you know, I don't think that question is really relevant to the discussion. I mean,
well, then you didn't hear the State of the Union address, because that was the president was terrifying us with horrible stories of people committing crimes who have come here. And by God, we've got to stop it. Otherwise, more of these people's kids are going to get killed. I'll let you respond to that.
We can deny that there are immigrants who do commit crimes, and that's really the issue, is what do we do with that small fraction of the immigrant population that has committed crimes, that have come here and are terrorizing immigrant communities? That's is a real problem, and for that we need to enforce our immigration laws.
Jessica Vaughn's the director of the Center for Immigration Studies. She's in Washington, D.C. We're in Chicago, where it just beeped 2 o'clock. I got to get to my news, Jessica. I'm really glad you were able to join us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Enjoyed it.